125 and counting. That's how many scholars have guests participated in the History Behind News program, a program that is not financially backed by any institutions, a program that does not require subscription for you to enjoy and benefit from. This is a free program, but to sustain it, we rely on your support. So please consider supporting this program on a monthly or one-time basis and for any amount you like by clicking the support link in the detailed caption of this episode. December 25th is here. It's Christmas, when we celebrate Jesus' birthday.
The most detailed explanation we have of Jesus' birth in those Gospels is by Luke, who was a doctor, but was also an early historian. Luke's account in his Gospel does not give us a date. Nowhere in Scripture is the date of December 25th mentioned. So the date itself is not—it's not foundational. It's not critical to the exercise of the Christian faith. However, why December 25th came to be chosen as the date is really an incredible, marvelous story in and of itself. When the pilgrims come to Plymouth, the pilgrims were a part of this same sort of attitude that there were too many festivities, too much celebration, that Christianity had lost its way because it was really focused on the experiential and not the relative doctrinal truths. So no, in the 1620s, if you went to Plymouth, you would not have really seen anything like a Christmas day. The Anglicans are probably the ones who are most responsible for its widespread honoring. In the colonial period, it probably would have been associated with a period of fasting and feasting. Now, the Dutch Calvinists who settled the New Netherlands in what became New York, they had even more robust appreciation for Christmas. R.H. Macy is usually given the title as the first man to put in a storefront windows a Christmas display. I think that was probably around 1874. It took Protestants a little while. It really took Protestants to be able to get through the Depression and World War II before they finally said, okay, we're going to celebrate Christmas. So beginning in the 1950s, I would say 1950s and 1960s America is peak Christmas.
Did you know that in the antebellum South, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day were like our New Year's Eve and New Year's Day now? There were fireworks and much partying to be had. In fact, in America, Christmas did not become this family-centered event as we think of it today until after World War II. Which is really not that long ago. Hey there, News Peelers. Today is Wednesday, December 20th, 2023. It's 5 days before Christmas. And this is Adele, your host at the History Behind News podcast. Aren't you tired of the repetitive news on TV and social media? They just go over the same dramatized developments all day long. Do you ever wonder what happened before our news? I mean, how do we get here? They say if you don't know your history, you're bound to repeat it. So while others cover the news, I uncover its history. I call this peeling the history behind news, which we accomplish in weekly conversations with distinguished scholars who delve deep into history to give us their fascinating perspectives from our past. I'm committed to making in-depth history that are researched and written by scholars, enjoyable and accessible to everyone. So grab a cup of coffee, or your favorite drink, or both, and let's get into it. In this episode, I asked my guest, Dr. Carrie Roberts, if it's a bad thing for practicing Christians that my family and I celebrate Christmas. We have even attended Christmas Mass. But here's the thing, we're not Christian. I open my introduction with this point because I think it goes to the heart of the matter about Christmas, that in many ways it has become a universal celebration and a recognition. By the way, Dr. Roberts explains the difference between those words, celebration and recognition, in the context of Christmas. So let's return to the question I asked. Is it a bad thing that many non-Christians or non-practicing Christians celebrate Christmas as a cultural event or also as an important time for the family? There are some people who think that it is, in fact, a problem. For example, about a decade ago, Sarah Palin, remember her? She authored the following book, Good Tidings and Great Joy, Protecting the Heart of Christmas, in which she expressed her displeasure at the over-commercialization of Christmas and its homogenization. In the book, she called for preserving Jesus Christ in all Christmas celebrations and events. This episode is not about America's cultural wars. Rather, as Dr. Roberts explains, it's about how different cultural as well as religious practices have shaped our Christmas today. And discussions and differences about Christmas are not a product of recent decades at all. For example, in our own country, the Puritans' view of Christmas was much different than, say, the Anglicans' view of Christmas. Dr. Roberts tells us how it took some time for Christmas to be nationally celebrated. For example, the first Christmas tree in the White House was not displayed until 1889, more than a century after George Washington became our first president. For more on Christmas at the White House, check out the link I've dropped for you to a White House Historical Association website. I've really enjoyed reading it, and I think you will too. In this episode, we'll also talk about commercialization of Christmas, the Coca-Cola story, and much more. Dr. Roberts is a professor of history and, online, Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at Liberty University, which has the following tagline, Training Champions for Christ since 1971. His research interests include early American intellectual and economic history. He has lectured and published widely in the fields of the American founding, monetary and banking history, American intellectual life, and Southern literature. He has been a ruling elder in the Presbyterian Church of America and the Evangelical Presbyterian Church. To learn more about Dr. Roberts, you can visit his academic homepage, the link for which is provided in the detailed caption of this episode. So, stay with me as Dr. Roberts and I peel the history behind this news. I'm excited to share with you the news that in January 2024, we will launch Unraveling the Middle East. It's a whole new weekly podcast, a series on the Middle East, its in-depth history and analysis. I've dropped a link to Unraveling the Middle East in the detailed caption of this episode, so you can follow this new program on your favorite podcast platform. Now, let's get back to our conversation with Dr. Roberts about the history of Christmas. Dr. Roberts, it's a pleasure to have you on our program. Thank you for taking the time for this conversation with me. So for most of us, Christmas is a grand celebration. But the grandness of Christmas in Christianity seems to me to be unique among world religions, although I'm sure many other religions observe and even celebrate the birth of their prophets. I can't really think of any other one that imbues that celebration with so much grandness and so much sort of feeling and meaning, love, peace, charity, holiday. It's an event. It's a big event. So how did this happen?
Well, so the grandness of Christmas, it depends in large part on what you mean by grandness, because on the one hand, we can define that grandness as a kind of celebratory experience. We might define it as the commercialization that has taken place with Christmas over the past several decades, or we could define grandness in terms of the doctrinal importance of Jesus's incarnation to Christianity. And certainly from the standpoint of Christians, it is a very important, it is a grand thing. From the standpoint of the global economy in 2023, It's also a grand day, but for a very different reason.
Let's go to Christianity, doctrinal Christianity. Why is this a big part of the religion?
Well, Christmas originates with Christianity, particularly in the gospel accounts of the birth of Jesus. The most detailed explanation we have of Jesus's birth in those gospels is by Luke, who was a doctor, but was also an early historian. He not only authored the Gospel of Luke, but he also authored the book of Acts, which accounts for the first few years of the Christian faith. Luke, as well as other authors of books of the Bible, emphasize the critical importance of the birth of Jesus, and that Jesus is born not only is he God, but he is also man. And so for Christianity, the incarnation, which is what we refer to as the birth of Jesus, is critical in understanding that important doctrine. So if we go to the Council of Nicaea, for example, the Nicene Creed or the Ancient Apostles' Creed, but the Nicene Creed kind of captures this
best.
That's
about the 300s in Constantinople.
Right, that Jesus is both fully God and fully man. And so the incarnation is really important for that. And it's really, I think, foundational for Christianity.
You know, now that you explained that, I have to go and change the language of my question to you a little bit.
Okay.
I said many other religions celebrate and observe the birth of their prophets. I use that word. But based on what you're saying, this is not about Jesus. The centrality of Christmas is not about birth of a prophet, is that he's man and God. And which leads me to my second question that I'd queued up to ask you. And this is why Christmas is so big.
Right. It's sort of the focal point. And in the story of Christianity, in the way most, and I'm going to use the word orthodox in our conversation. And I want to stress that when I use the word orthodox, I don't really mean orthodox Christians, Eastern Rite Christians. I mean orthodox.
You mean orthodoxy.
Right. Orthodoxy as opposed to heterodoxy.
Yeah.
So for most Orthodox Christians, the birth of Jesus comes at the middle of their story of redemption. So the beginning part of that story of redemption starts really with creation and goes through the history of the Israelites, over and over again, stressing the inability of human beings to lead a life of holiness that does not disobey God, or that they are always in a constant state of rebellion against God.
Mm-hmm.
And so the incarnation is the centerpiece of that story, because through the incarnation, God is implementing his plan for the gospel and the plan for redeeming human beings, not based on their efforts, but redeeming human beings based on his efforts as both God and as a human being. So fully God, fully man.
You mentioned Nicaea, and we talked about its approximate date somewhere in the 300s. Did it take a while for Christmas to assume a central position in Christianity?
Well, Adele, that is an interesting question in which there are many explanations.
Interesting.
Luke's account in his gospel does not give us a date. Nowhere in Scripture is the date of December 25th mentioned. In fact, there's some question if even people in Palestine knew of the month of December at that period of time. So the date itself is not foundational. It's not critical to the exercise of the Christian faith. However, why December 25th came to be chosen as the date is really an incredible, marvelous story in and of itself, because we don't exactly know. There is some evidence that as early as the second century, that Christians in Antioch, which Antioch was the really the main center of initial Christianity. Antioch is where they were first called Christians.
Not Jerusalem, because
they were kind of in hiding throughout most of the time there. Okay. In Jerusalem. It took them a number of years to get out. So their mission efforts went to Antioch, and there Christianity really began to blossom. There's evidence that somewhere in the 150s, 160s, 170s, that Antiochian Christians were honoring Christmas on December 25th.
Wow, it goes back that far. The 160s, that's pretty early in the history of Christianity.
It is. And then what we have for subsequent accounts or recognitions, I like to use that word recognition if I could, recognitions of some honoring of the birthday of Jesus typically come in the 5th and 6th centuries. And there it is just that. It's more of a recognition that people are already doing things to honor.
Wait, Dr. Roberts, using the word recognition as opposed to celebration, is that it?
Right. And that's kind of, I'm choosing that word very carefully. Because what form of recognition took place in the earliest days, earliest centuries of Christianity were probably times of fasting. And then by the 5th and 6th century, were beginning to be associated with some sort of feast. But probably
that's a major shift from fasting to feast.
Yes. Well, I mean, even throughout the ancient world and throughout other ancient religions, and certainly as typified in Judaism and in Christianity, fasting and feasting would often go hand in hand.
Oh, okay.
You would have a time of fasting, which would then be concluded with some sort of feast. And we see that kind of emerge with Christmas. For example, the Council of Tours, which there are a lot of councils, as you probably know, and as probably many of your viewers and listeners know. But the one in particular, the Council of Tours that took place in 567. Now, Tours in 567, it's also sort of a center of Christianity. It was probably one of the most important centers of Christian education during the middle of late antiquity.
And this is in Southern Europe?
Really kind of in central France, Eastern France.
Yeah.
So it was from there that, like I said, a number of important doctrines were reaffirmed at that council. And there it is recognized that there is this season of fasting leading up to December 25th. And it was encouraged that monks should go through a period of fasting, in anticipation of honoring the incarnation, which in terms of Latin and subsequent translations, we would say was the Advent of Christmas. And that was recognized as something already happening, and it was simply encouraged that continue.
I see.
Even in Tours, about a century earlier, one of the bishops of Tours had, we know he probably recognized almost formally December as the birth date of Jesus.
Dr. Roberts, from time to time, I either hear or read these sort of suggestion. I don't think there's any historical evidence or archaeological evidence, I'm not sure, that one of the reasons why Christmas was chosen, the date of December 25th, is that it sort of piggybacked on an existing Roman holiday. I'd love to hear your take on that.
Yeah, it's sort of. And so I want to try and give maybe both sides of this.
Please.
Because the common rejection of December 25th being the birthday of Jesus is rooted a lot in what you've just described, that there was this pagan holiday. It was probably Mithraism. Mm-hmm. Mithraism was the most popular religion during the 5th and 6th century, at the end of the Roman Empire, moving into the Byzantium, the period of the Byzantines. And so Mithra, the god of that religion, was said to have been born of a rock on, you want to guess the day? December 25th.
Yeah. December 25th, okay.
Yeah. And so that is one of the arguments that this is not just coincidence, and it's much more than coincidence. Now, the other side of the argument is that those who reject December 25th are really reading into the early days of the church the way Christian missionaries behaved at the end of antiquity and into the Middle Ages. During that period, a lot of popes insisted that their missionaries try and determine anything in local religious rituals or local religious forms or ideas that might just barely mimic anything about Christianity and the Christian faith.
To make the introduction of Christianity more palatable, more familiar.
Right, right. Use okay. that to kind of introduce various types of Christianity, okay. forms of it into these local areas. And that was prolific. That was all over the place in okay. the 8th, 9th, 10th century. But in the early church, there was so much animosity to paganism and other types of religious forms. And when you look at the way these councils, like the Council of Tours, handled this, I mean, the same declaration in 567, where they encourage monks to honor that period of fasting, they're also saying you must stamp out anything resembling paganism.
I see. So that kind of goes against the suggestion that early church would have picked up 25th because of existing pagan right. practices. I see. And there's a whole different thing to comment here, if I may, Dr. Roberts, is that it doesn't matter based on what you were saying. It could be December 27th. I mean, the doctrinal reason for celebrating the birth of Jesus is more central than just what specific
right.
date.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. And there's a strong tradition also in Christianity, beginning in late antiquity, that Jesus was born in March, which would coincide with March being the first month of the Roman calendar. It was normally assumed that Jesus was crucified in March, March 25th. Typically, though, there are other Christian traditions in late antiquity, in the Middle Ages, that pinpointed his birth in April. Protestants, critical of Roman Catholicism, after the Reformation, sort of picked up on this. And you actually even hear today a lot of Protestants using the book of Luke, saying, well, Luke talks about shepherds being in the fields at the time of Jesus's birth. Bethlehem was the center of the offering industry around Jerusalem. So Bethlehem is where they raised a lot of the sheep and other animals used for sacrifices in the temple. And typically those sheep would be out grazing in the fields in springtime when the grass has greened up and they're springing lambs.
Interesting. So they're saying it couldn't be December.
Maybe it could also be argued that Luke says that because it was highly unusual, and so many other things that he relates in his gospel are unusual things.
Yeah.
As a historian, Adele, right?
Yeah.
We're always looking for unusual things.
That's right. That's right.
So maybe that's in there as well. But it doesn't matter what the date.
Yeah, I get it. We'll be back after a short break to talk about Christmas in pre-industrial America. We'll be right back. In this episode, Dr. Roberts mentions Thanksgiving and President Lincoln's hand in nationalizing this important holiday. But what was Thanksgiving really like? I'm talking about that first Thanksgiving in 1621. And what about Thanksgiving the next year in 1622 or in 1623? How did the Pilgrims and Indians celebrate Thanksgiving in those subsequent years? This is the story of the Wampanoag Native Americans and the English settlers in Plymouth. I'll provide a link for you to my conversation with Dr. David Silverman in Season 3, Episode 46, about the real history of that first Thanksgiving and its aftermath. Now, let's get back to our conversation with Dr. Roberts about the real history of Christmas. Dr. Roberts, how did Christmas enter America's culture?
Well, that's an incredible question, and I really love that question because it gives me an opportunity as a historian to talk about not only what Christmas means to Americans over time, mm-hmm. but how Christmas is a reflection, if not a microcosm, of the diverse regional cultural identities that characterize the American past.
Wait, so, repeat that again. You say it is not a microcosm. That's what
no,
you said.
No, I said it is. It really is a microcosm. Okay. It's more than just a reflection. It's almost encapsulates all of these various regional and cultural forms that are so important, not only to early American history, but to America today.
Okay.
We think about culture wars, right? I don't know that many folks talk about culture wars that often. The 90s and the early 2000s.
We didn't. Yeah.
But that sort of thing has always been a part of American life. It's there from the very beginning as settlers move up the James River from Jamestown. It's there in Plymouth. It's there across Massachusetts Bay and in other colonies. So each one of these major cultural groups are going to be bringing with them certain attitudes and traditions related to Christmas.
Okay.
In some places, there was a attitude of dismissiveness. Of Christmas. There was insistence that Christmas was really distracting Christians of all people from the rudiments of the Christian faith.
But you just said it's central in the last segment.
It is central to Christianity as a whole, but not necessarily with all groups of Christians. Over the course of Christian history of the past 2,000 years, some elements of the faith have emphasized Christmas. Some have emphasized the crucifixion and resurrection. Others have emphasized various aspects of Jesus's life. But there have been some that have downplayed our obsession with various parts of Jesus's earthly ministry, the Puritans being one of them. The Puritans would argue over and again that we should not just be celebrating or honoring Jesus's birth one day out of the year. We should be doing that every day out of the year.
With our deeds.
Exactly. Same thing with Easter. Easter was not something that was special just one day of the year for the Puritans. Jesus's birth, life, crucifixion, and resurrection should be.
So what you're saying, if I may interrupt you, mm-hmm. So Puritans come December 1620 to the Plymouth area. So let's say I visited Plymouth, let's say 1640, 20 years later, on December 25th, I wouldn't see big Christmas celebration, right?
Well, when the Pilgrims come to Plymouth, the Pilgrims were a part of this same sort of attitude that there were too many festivities, too much celebration, that Christianity had lost its way because it was really focused on the experiential and not the relative doctrinal truths. And so the Pilgrims were separatists. And they wanted to separate from various forms of Christianity in order to pursue its purest form. So no, in the 1620s, if you went to Plymouth, you would not have really seen anything like a Christmas day. For the Puritans, who were a part of the Church of England and wanted to purify the Church of England from its festivities, they too would not have celebrated Christmas in any robust fashion through the 1620s, 30s, and 40s. But Adele, the Puritans died off. they didn't last. So I guess in some ways, Christmas won.
Yeah, yeah. So which group of immigrants introduced Christmas to America? Or is that even the wrong question to ask? Not really introduced, it sort of grew. How do we approach this?
Yeah, they all know of Christmas. I want to be clear about that. Every Puritan child would have heard the word Christmas.
Yeah.
The Anglicans are probably the ones who are most responsible for its widespread honoring. In the colonial period, it probably would have been associated with a period of fasting and feasting. And it would have occurred during that third week of December. Now, the Dutch Calvinists who settled the New Netherlands in what became New York, they had even more robust appreciation for Christmas. And it is the Dutch that really are going to be bringing in the stories of Saint Nicholas.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
Who, of course, based on Nicholas, the Bishop of Myra, really in present day Turkey, and then the Dutch words for Saint Nicholas kind of got Dutchified over the centuries and became Sinterklaas instead of Nicholas, Sinterklaas, which is where we get Santa Claus.
Oh, interesting. So, was there a regional difference in America then? So, you know, let's say, I don't know, Benjamin Franklin is a child. It's 1740. You know, it's, well, actually, he's not a child by then, but a young man, and he goes from New England to South Carolina, where you have Anglicans, more Anglicans than you do up north. Does he see a difference in celebration of Christmas?
Yes, he would have seen a significant difference, and he would have seen a difference in Pennsylvania to the degree to which Quakers did celebrate Christmas. It probably would have been an emphasis on the fasting side of it. Whereas had he journeyed to the Carolinas, where there's a much stronger Anglican presence and a other kind of Presbyterian presence than what Franklin would have grown up with, where he was from, there would have been a greater emphasis on the feasting side of
Christmas. So they're still Presbyterians, but sort of a different, I don't want to say denomination, but they emphasize the focus on different aspects.
Right.
I.e. Right, feasting. I love it. Okay.
Yeah. The famous South Carolina writer, antebellum writer, William Gilmore Sims, produced a short novel called The Golden Christmas in the 1840s, where he describes these Christmas rituals that were common in South Carolina and across other parts of the South. And it was a boisterous time of partying and feasting and the great hunt that actually was kind of a part of Nordic traditions related to this period of time. And they came together on a plantation on Christmas Eve and decided to go hunt a boar. Then they slaughtered the boar, they partied all night, and then feasted on Christmas Day.
So we're talking about the tradition of the South, and this sounds really wild and fun. Tell me about the church members, the clergy. Were they watching this and saying, shame on you, this is abhorrent? Or were they more familiar because they also were from the South?
I think typically across the South, most Christian ministers were willing to endure some honoring of Christmas.
Yeah.
And to varying degrees, they would make it a celebration. And this is in the colonial and into the antebellum period.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about before the Civil War. After the Civil War, everything really starts to change.
And we're going to get into that because of industrialization,
Right, right. And just the consequences of the war. I mean, in some ways, that culture war was kind of finalized as a result of the war. And so you start seeing a harmonization of some Christmas traditions. But there was in the South, just going back to your question about Presbyterians, Presbyterians were particularly sensitive to festivities, not just because they were anti-Catholic and they wanted to reject medieval Catholic practices of going back to the old passion plays and dramas of the medieval period. The Scots themselves had a really hard time with seasonal celebrations, particularly in terms of the Christian communion or the Lord's Supper. That's considered to be a sacrament of Christian worship. The Scots tried to have it very regularly. They even mandated that Presbyterian churches had to have communion either every quarter of the year or at least twice a year, but they could never get enough ministers to do it.
Yeah.
And so they ended up having communion just once a year, and it became known as the communion season. Well, in good Scottish fashion, these things quickly degenerated into times of debaucherous partying and celebrations. So there's this line of Presbyterians in really all over the United States, but even in the South, even up until this day, that they kind of frown upon seeing holy things turned into celebrations like that.
That's fascinating. We'll be back after a short break to talk about what Dr. Roberts just mentioned, Christmas celebration after the Civil War. We'll be right back.
We hope you are enjoying this podcast. And if you are, then why not treat us to a cup of coffee? That's right. For the price of a cup of coffee, you too can become a monthly supporter of the History Behind News podcast. We rely on your support to continue this program, to continue peeling the history behind our news. Supporting us is easy. Just click the support link in the detailed caption of this episode. And while you're there, check out the information about our guests and other attributions and links. And thank you.
Dr. Roberts, when did businesses begin capitalizing on Christmas?
Well, they certainly capitalize upon Christmas today.
Of course, yeah.
It is estimated by economists, by the World Economic Forum, by businesses involved in currency transfers, that in 2023, globally, between $1 to $2 trillion will be spent on Christmas. Now, that may include gifts, it may include travel, it may include food, and of course, it varies from country to country over where the emphasis is. I mean, in Nigeria, the emphasis is on food. In the United States, the emphasis is on presents. Now, that $1 to $2 trillion may not seem like a lot, but when you realize that those same economists and banks estimate that the global petroleum industry is somewhere fluctuating between $4 to $7 trillion.
Jesus. And
we think the world rests on petroleum. You get some sense of how important spending can be.
Okay. So how about, let's say, 1870, 1880?
Well, it really begins to be commercialized in a robust fashion in the 1870s, following the Civil War, during Reconstruction. You start seeing stores marketing things toward Christmas giving, Christmas presents. R.H. Macy is usually given the title as the first man to put in a storefront windows a Christmas display. I think that was probably around 1874. And it included, among many things, it was a story out of Uncle Tom's Cabin, along with some baby dolls that Macy wanted to sell for children. But you really can't have storefront displays, Adele, until you have gas lighting. So until gas lighting expands economically around the country in the 1870s and 1880s, you don't really see those storefront displays becoming popular. But once they start, once that domino begins to fall, it quickly proliferates around the United States.
When you say proliferates around the United States, now 1870s, President Grant is in office those 8 years. Would he have seen this proliferation up in Boston as well as, let's say, down in Savannah?
He would have.
I'm asking that question, by the way, in the context of our conversation in the previous segment where we talked about Puritans.
Yeah, he would have seen that because in other parts of the United, in all parts of the United States, by the time of the Civil War and immediately afterward, Christmas is going to be, and I'm going to now use the word celebrated, but the celebration will vary in level from region to region. Mm-hmm. Grant would have recognized it. Now, Adele, you and your viewers cannot hold me on account to this.
Don't worry.
I have now forgotten the important date. It was around this time that the first Christmas tree is used at the White House. I don't remember if it was Grant or maybe Cleveland, but the Christmas trees are actually become popular in the United States in the 1870s. Called German trees at first.
And that becomes an industry. Yeah. I want to speak with you about the continuity of our Christmas culture. I know it's a big topic. We'd have to sit here for hours. But I'll approach the question this way. I'll pick four individuals. Would George Washington recognize our Christmas?
So if we think historically over how Christians have practiced Christmas, it is usually a time of fasting, feasting, and thankfulness. George Washington would have definitely recognized the fasting side of this, and he would have recognized the thankfulness side of this. But when he is at Valley Forge, he's not going to be recognizing the feasting side of this.
Yeah.
That's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So
how about
that kind of begins the important part of our conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. How about, let's say, Andrew Jackson? Now we're talking about 1830s.
Yeah. Jackson would have begun to recognize the feasting element of it, that Christmas was something to be celebrated, that it was a time in which there was a gathering of friends and family. Probably not a obsession. I shouldn't use that word, but an obsession with family like evolves after World War II. But he certainly would have recognized it as a special day in which there was some special meal being served and a time of joy, probably a lot of liquor.
Before I ask about the next president I have in mind, you said obsession with family started, sort of evolved out of World War II. Why World War II?
Well, that's when you really begin to see, coming out of the Depression and into World War II, popular culture associating this holiday season with family togetherness. And of course, the movies are, I'll Be Home for Christmas.
Of course, of course.
Holiday Inn and Bing Crosby and others singing these popular tunes, emphasizing family togetherness as something that is synonymous with the holiday season.
It's funny. I would have never thought otherwise. So are you suggesting that prior to this development after World War II, Christmas may have been something more akin to New Year's Eve or something like that, where people celebrated in groups with friends?
So, Adele, the way I like to think of it is that what Americans do, remember, thankfulness, fasting, and feasting.
Yeah.
We basically take those three things and we break them up across an entire holiday season, beginning with Thanksgiving and ending with New Year's. In fact, there's not a lot of fasting in the 20th century American holiday traditions. But I would argue that we're starting to see that resurface in the 21st century because in January, we all join a gym and buy some diet.
Okay.
So things like our celebrations that we have on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, in the antebellum period, in the antebellum South, that was what Christmas Eve and Christmas Day were like. In fact, even in the 20th century, in parts of the South, fireworks were associated with Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, not with New Year's Day.
Oh, okay. You mentioned cultural wars, and one that really comes to mind that reached some sort of conclusion was the Civil War. So would President Lincoln, in the middle of a war and in America that was fundamentally changing, recognize our Christmas?
Well, that's an interesting question in light of what we now are beginning to understand about Lincoln. I mean, if you go to Springfield today and you visit
to Lincoln's Illinois, home,
right? You go to Springfield, Illinois. You visit Abraham and Mary Todd Lincoln's home. You get a picture of a corporate lawyer on the make, someone who he and his wife wanted the latest technology, the latest fashion, the latest curtains, the latest wallpaper. In other words, you would get a sense of a family that was commercialized or at least commercializing. And yet, Abraham Lincoln is the man almost singular responsible for the modern American Thanksgiving. That is where our contemporary Thanksgiving comes from. Lincoln's Thanksgiving Proclamation in 1863. Though Jefferson Davis did have a proclamation in 1862 for the Confederacy a year earlier, but it's really Lincoln's that we count on. So he would have recognized that part of it and maybe even get a few hints on the commercialized side.
Interesting. That's a very, that's a part of Lincoln that I think most of us don't really appreciate, his personality. How about, let's pick another president that's really on the cusp of modernization of our broadcast system, Teddy Roosevelt. We don't have the radio yet, but newspapers, just, you know, ubiquitous. You get the morning paper, you get the afternoon paper. Yeah. I'm old enough to remember the afternoon paper still in San Francisco. How about Teddy Roosevelt? He was a fun, good, rollicking guy.
Well, Adele, I'm so grateful that you chose one of the Roosevelts, one of our Dutch presidents.
Oh, that's right.
Because by the 20th century, is, you know, this culture war that has long been a part of American society, certain things begin to settle out. And you start seeing symmetry and cross-pollination in a very substantial way by the end of the 19th and the early 20th century. And so Teddy Roosevelt's presidency and that of his cousin, Franklin's, coincide with an important cross-pollination that occurs with Christmas. And that is the emergence of Santa Claus. You still have, across many parts of the United States, the presence of Father Christmas, which is much more closely associated with St. Nicholas and the giving of gifts to children. Many parts of the United States still celebrated St. Nicholas Eve and St. Nicholas Day, which I believe we are actually recording this on St. Nicholas Eve.
Oh, really? So, interesting. December 5th. Okay.
Yeah, 5th and 6th is when it was usually celebrated. And so, but then you have the Dutch emphasis on Sinterklaas, which is kind of gets mixed in with various medieval traditions, even some non-Christian traditions that evolve into modern-day Santa Claus. But Santa Claus really doesn't become Santa Claus until the late 1920s and really 1930, 1931, when a Southern beverage company, Coca-Cola,
This is a great story.
Executives at this Southern Beverage Company hire a Michigan-born designer, a Dutch Michigan-born designer named Haddon Sundblom to design a marketing ad based on this guy named Santa Claus. Well, he goes back to a poem that had been produced by Clement Clark Moore in 1822. Now, we know this poem is "Twas the Night Before Christmas." I think it was called "A Visit from St. Nicholas" when it was first published. But that's where he gets this image of Santa Claus. He draws on all these Dutch traditions, and he literally draws our modern day Santa Claus for this Coca-Cola ad in 1931.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. And he's Dutch, and both Teddy and Franklin Roosevelt are both Dutch. And there's another reason why I asked you about Teddy Roosevelt, what he would think of our Christmas. Just, I don't know, maybe a couple of decades before his presidency, we get a humongous influx of Catholic and also maybe to a lesser extent Orthodox Christians that come to our country. So now we have Slavic people, we have Italians, we have Spanish from Spain who are then, we thought of them as completely outsiders. Now Catholicism is so ingrained. How did that impact Christmas when Teddy Roosevelt was president? Are there stuff that we do that would be foreign to him now?
I would argue that these new Eastern European communities, which are by and large Roman Catholic, they're not all Roman Catholic, as you mentioned. They are also, many of them are Orthodox.
Yeah.
They have no hesitation celebrating with a C the incarnation of Jesus Christ. And there is no coincidence that early Hollywood film producers really capitalize upon this desire to celebrate Christmas in those early Christmas films that we all have come to know and love today. It took Protestants a little while. It really took Protestants to be able to get through the Depression and World War II before they finally said, okay, we're going to celebrate Christmas. So beginning in the 1950s, I would say 1950s and 1960s America is peak Christmas. So much of what we do today with modern Christmas celebrations kind of gelled together in the 50s and 60s. So Protestants start having elaborate Christmas musicals. Lots of feasts go along with this, and Christmas they start decorating their churches, which was an old Anglican tradition. The mainline churches did have hanging of the greens and things along those lines. But the idea of having some major entertainment with a Protestant church for Christmas really originates in the 50s and 60s. Do we have Roman Catholic immigrants to thank for this? Maybe so.
Maybe so. That's interesting. Let's take a break here. Stay with me and Dr. Roberts as we get into the perspective.
The History Behind News podcast is available on all your favorite podcast platforms. Of course, we love your reviews and ratings of our podcast, especially on Apple and Spotify. And remember, don't keep us to yourself. Tell a friend about the History Behind News podcast.
Dr. Roberts, do you think that America's practicing Christians, devout Christians of whatever denomination, are concerned that Christmas is becoming way too diluted?
Well, that was certainly the case in the 2010s, in which I think it was Sarah Palin who might have written a book, "The War on Christmas."
Really? Oh, I would. Okay.
Now, don't quote me on that. I think I've got that right, Adele. But it was okay. There was a book that was published during the teens entitled that, and there was animosity toward corporate America and decisions made to downplay the word Christmas in favor of holidays and So I do think there's certainly significant elements of Christians, and it doesn't matter whether they're conservative or liberal, who believe that Christmas has been too secularized. Now, I think it's important that as historians, as the learned public, and as Christians think about traditions of Christmas, we need to really avoid misconstruing what has occurred over the past 2,000 years. It's very easy for us, Adele, for example, it's very easy for us to think of Christmas and Christmas traditions like an onion, or if you're from Louisiana, oignon, to think of it as this core religious principle or event upon which there are layers and layers of secular and other types of religious traditions added. I don't think that's a proper analogy of Christmas, at least not in the United States.
So you don't think Okay, let me just listen before I ask.
I think to use another culinary analogy, it's more like a broken emulsification. It still has very deep, meaningful religious elements, but they're side by side with things which are also important, but equally as secular as those are religious. And they don't always live in happy harmony. And there does seem to be competition between these things. But I'm not so sure that the secular side is always winning. I'm not so sure it's even winning today.
Why do you say that?
Well, I really got clued on to this thanks to a historian named Daryl Hart, D.G. Hart, in which he wrote a number of years ago that in 2015, Netflix offered a Christmas show. This was a time in which Miley Cyrus was the great popular performer and certainly not known for performance that most Christians would consider to be morally acceptable.
Yeah.
And yet Netflix had Miley sing A Homage to the Christ Child, Silent Night. And so Hart's argument was that this shows the continuing power of Christianity as a cultural force.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And it sort of reined in Miley Cyrus. There are not many things that have been able to do such a feat for our popular culture icons.
And let me share another aspect of this. When you and I started talking before we started the program, we were just chatting. I told you about my own background. I'm not Christian and my family is not, but we always have a Christmas tree since childhood. We've always had it. I've been to Christmas Mass several times in the small town, Northern California, Los Gatos, then in Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. Is that a bad thing for Christianity that non-practicing peoples or groups come in? They're not taking away the tradition, but are sort of joining and have a sense of belonging to this tradition, but not the religious aspects of it. Does my question make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I think now, as a practicing Christian, my answer is anytime you have people who pay homage to Jesus, that is a good thing.
Yeah.
As a historian, I also believe that it does show the ongoing relevance and power of religion to captivate the human imagination. There is this yearning that Christmas satisfies, and not just in the United States, not just in Europe, but really in all parts of the world.
Yeah.
It really says something about the human condition, I think. And I think it says something that is very beneficial. If soldiers in World War I could agree to peacefully lay down their arms and enjoy a day of truce on Christmas Day, that means something really important.
Isn't that a great story? In 1914, they literally stopped fighting. They had officers had to come in and intervene so that they fight. And for the record, when I have attended Mass on Christmas Eve, it does have great value. It's a moment of reflection. It's a moment of spending time with family and community. And, you know, I don't think you need to be a practicing Christian to really benefit from that. And so I think it has a lot of value for everyone, but you already knew that. If you wanted our audience to remember just one point about Christmas in America, what would it be?
Well, I believe that Christmas represents many of the best things about American civilization. It represents, like I said, this emulsification. People are able to practice various customs and traditions and keep the sanctity of those customs and traditions without forcing others to sacrifice theirs. And whether we use Christmas trees or tinsel, whether we sing about sleigh rides, or the incarnation of Jesus, this is a moment in which all of America singularly stops.
Yeah.
It is the only day America stops. And that is worth recognizing.
It is. It is. Dr. Roberts, thank you so much for educating me and our listeners. And to our listeners, if you know of any history that could provide more perspective from the past on this subject, please share it with us and tell us what's your perspective. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
The opinions and statements of our guests are their own. We neither agree nor disagree with them. We're only interested in the perspective they provide through history. At History Behind News, we're honored that our guests share their expertise with us, most of which are based on years of scholarship and research, and we provide links to their projects and publications for your benefit to review them if you wish. Otherwise, we're not affiliated with our guests. We just think they teach us pretty cool history, the history behind our news. Also, unless we explicitly inform you, we're not affiliated with any institutions, including Amazon, for which book links are shared here from time to time for your convenience. Finally, as a reminder, we don't do news here at History Behind News. We peel the news for the history behind it. And our mission is not to provide a complete account and analysis of the past. Rather, is to highlight some issues and incidents in our history that may poke and prod your discerning minds into seeking some perspective for our news. And if you disagree with our take on history, well then, it means we've succeeded in getting you to think about the history behind news. And of course, share your thoughts with me by leaving your comments on Twitter or sending an email to Adele@historybehindnews.com. I love to hear from you. I love to learn from you. Until next time, this is Adele with History Behind News, a history podcast for our news.